Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Morning, guys. Russ here. And I've got some exciting news for you all. Support for All Over Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement. For all your below-the-waist grooming needs, get 20% off and free delivery with the code MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. Manscaped has just launched in the UK, and men have gone for years and years and years without having the right tools for the job. You can be one of the first men in the UK to experience their life-changing products. I know over the years I've struggled many times with personal grooming, shaving, creams, cutting yourself, all that sort of stuff. But none of that is a problem with the Manscaped redesigned electric trimmer. It features a cutting ceramic edge blade to reduce grooming accidents, 7,000 RPM motor, which enables it to work seamlessly through even the thickest of hair. So go get rid of that bush, make it clean and tidy, and get 20% off and free delivery with the code MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free delivery with MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. Your balls will definitely thank you. Now it's time for Brian Habana.
Hi there, I'm Brian Habana, and you're listening to the MALLOVER Podcast.
Hello, good evening and welcome to this week's MALLOVER Podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you the news, views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at MALLOVER Podcast, we are MALLOVER Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Anchor and Google and Apple Podcasts and stuff like that. We're going to start off this week with, obviously, in recent weeks, we have been supported very kindly by Manscaped, who are the number one in male grooming products. And you can get 20% off all Manscaped products with free shipping using the code MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. Now, we did decide to do like an Ask MALLOVER Anything. And one of the questions for Ask MALLOVER Anything came from our punching chat host, Adam Foxcroft, which I think fits quite in well into this sort of sponsored segment that we'll do to start off with. And what I want to see and what I want to know from you guys is, which dictator from history do you think would have the most need for Manscaped products? Who would make the both best use of them, Ben?
Well, I think there's only one answer here, and it's got to be Stalin, isn't it? I mean, tremendous moustache, Georgian, and we've all seen Georgian props. So they've all got hairy backs, haven't they? You've got to say. I mean, to be fair, I mean, all of the Soviets look quite, kind of hairy to me. Khrushchev looks like a guy who would have a very hairy back. And Brezhnev, big eyebrows. So I think it's just generally the Soviets, surely.
Oh, well, that's an interesting take on it. I'm going to take it in a different direction, but I'll go to Phil next.
Well, I think Ben's wrong, to be honest. I think there's only one dictator who's famous for his slightly lank, wispy hair, not only on his face, but generally all over him, and that's Genghis Khan. He is properly in need of a trim and a tidy up. I think if he was a bit tidier, he might have been able to have some actual open conversation with people rather than just running away and being scared whilst they're having their head chopped off.
Mate, and imagine Genghis Khan with the redesigned electric trimmer.
With a face as smooth as a baby's bottom.
Absolutely, with a little light sack, on it.
With a ball sack as smooth as a face as smooth as a baby's bottom.
That would be incredible.
If Stalin hadn't have been so irritated by his hairy back, then he might not have purged anyone.
I'll tell you what, Genghis Khan with a nice bit of scrotal deodorant and the whole world's a different place.
I mean, scrotal deodorant, it could be the name of a podcast in its own right. Doug, not one for sort of facial hair even in your advanced years. But what's your thoughts?
Well, as you've mentioned, as I don't have a lot of facial hair.
You've got the same amount as Indira Gandhi.
Yeah, I'll take your word for that. But as someone who doesn't have a lot of facial hair and therefore not a lot of need to buy really expensive razor blades, I've turned my manscaping tool into a facescaping tool. And with that in mind, I think that someone that could really have used the Manscaped 3.0 would have been Adolf Hitler. He could have turned that thing on its side and shaped up that little top lip fuzz, and he could have got rid of it all, and then maybe he wouldn't have needed to give himself two in the bunker. He could have just shaved that off, done a little crazy thing with his hair and disappeared into the underground.
It's interesting you say that, because I'm going down a similar route. So Ben's gone for the Russians.
I thought you were going to say you'd been on an Argentinian holiday and seen someone who... It's funny you should say that,
because like you went down the Russian dictator route. Phil's gone down the Genghis Khan proper historical route.
Again?
Doug's gone down the World War II route.
Are you going to say Margaret Thatcher?
I mean, to be fair, she could have... The Manscaped 3.0, the Lawnmower 3.0 could have done a right job on her tash. But I'm going to look down towards Africa and the Middle East. Now, you think of Osama bin Laden. You know, he had that beard could always have done with a tidy up, couldn't it? Let's be honest. Saddam Hussein. You know, another man with an iconic moustache. You know, he could have done anything with that. And again, could have shaved it off and pretty much just disappeared in Iraq. Nobody would have known who he was. And then you can look at people like Colonel Gaddafi. You know, he always had a really neatly trimmed little goatee, although he was wearing...
If he'd have used the Manscaped 3.0, he could have had a promotion to Brigadier.
Brigadier Gaddafi.
I'm surprised he never did that for himself, really.
Oh, no, come on. Why limit yourself?
is he just giving... He's always giving himself somewhere to go.
Maybe he was happy with the pension.
Mama Gaddafi, chief of staff. Brilliant. Well, there you go. But you can get all of Manscaped products at 20% off using the code MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. That's MALLOVER20.
If you're a dictator, just take one.
There's actually no obligation to commit mass murder. So just buy one.
Pubic hairs.
Yeah.
Your balls will thank you.
Purge your trouser area.
I mean, that's technically what you're doing, isn't it? Purging. You're purging your body of all unwanted hair.
Yeah, it's so, a follicular genocide.
I mean, they've missed a trick there, haven't they, Manscaped? Yeah. Purging your genital area and follicular genocide. I mean, we've already come up with seven titles and we're 6 minutes in. Congratulations. So MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. Go and check it out.
Could I also say I picked some notoriously left-wing individuals, because I've been affected by some feedback we've had.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, right, I'm going to pick left-wing people to give it a bit of balance, because we're all notoriously white middle-aged men.
Who called us right-wing?
Did you not see the latest bit of feedback? Have we podcasted since I shared this bit of feedback?
Oh, no. You're talking about the Apple review, right?
Yeah, the Apple review. Fuck that. I mean, I don't even know who they are. And, you know, they can't have been listening for long. So it must have been one of those first-time listener, last-time listeners that we've also had a very similar review from. And that's my new favourite since that guy.
Yeah, I was just trying to bring a bit of balance.
But the complete irrelevance of, you know, regardless of what we talk about, how irrelevant is our age, creed, colour, you know, in all of this?
He's spot on.
he may well be, Doug, but, you know, there's no reason to put it on paper, is there?
No, there isn't. We could have been four middle-aged Egyptian men, for all he knew.
I mean, you're half the Chinese.
The manscapes would have come in very handy if we were.
What he doesn't realise is Doug, you know, Doug doesn't put many photos of himself on social media, and you know he's got a Chinese tinge.
I'm trying to help everyone's wives out.
Yeah, Phil's got a very you know, Irish look about him, and we all know where that leads us. And yeah, well, me and Ben are just very generic.
Yeah,
generic.
You just walk past us in the
with
street.
A beard that contains at least 9 different Pantone colours for us. You can't be generic.
I just blend into the background, mate.
That's the target that Russ is going for, is generic, because it's got to be better than a fat Johnny Bairstow.
Oh, mate, fat Johnny Bairstow. So like I say, I completed the trifecta last time, didn't we? So there you go. Yeah, so we're not going to talk too much about rugby. What I will say is Exeter Leinster was an amazing game, and Leinster thoroughly deserved to win. And one thing that never, ever changes is that Irish rugby Twitter is quite entertaining, if nothing else. Because even when they win, they're salty as fuck. It's the weirdest. Right, anyway, nobody really wants to hear us talk about Champions Cup rugby.
Nobody's tuned into this rugby podcast for any rugby.
Well, they haven't. That's true. Because when we announced that we wanted to do a bit of an Ask Us Anything, we were inundated with requests for
literally
for questions.
Ones of questions.
Literally one person's worth of questions, of which I've been going back this afternoon. So we'll have a bit of a ramble about some random questions. And one person in particular, who I think he used to be Rugby Wobble, who is a long-time listener of ours, whose Twitter handle is now something along the lines of Lee Sheriff du Chamoin Sac at Salty Nors on Twitter, has sent through a myriad of questions for us. And the first one, which is off the back of a conversation that we had the last time we podcasted before Doug was cleanly shaven balls deep in darts and Phil had some friends round, and that's not a euphemism. Do you remember the last thing we talked about on the last podcast, which was when we said ask Mo anything and we went down a very dark rabbit hole of worldly Mo Molan, especially. Yes, so the question from at Salty Nors is the first one. This is, he's sent us about 12. If you could be any Mo in the world of any era, which Mo would you be and why? Which Mo? Doug, you start us off.
I mean, you haven't given me long to think about it, and I don't really know that many Mo's, but the one that springs first to mind was Mo Ali Cox, the Indianapolis Colts tight end, just because he's fucking massive, and I bet he gets mad chicks.
Mad chicks. I mean, you didn't ask for too much time to prepare answers for this, and I did ask, you know, one of the questions before we started recording was, Has anybody bothered to look and prepare any answers? And the answer was prepare question mark. So this is all very much.
Let me change that. I think, and this is a, I'd be Mo Johnston, the ex-Celtic, Everton and Rangers footballer, the first ever footballer to play cross the divide, first Catholic to play for Rangers, I believe.
Love that.
Scored a load of goals as well.
Good. Phil?
Come to me last, because I don't want to steal anybody else's thunder.
All right. Go on then, Ben.
If it was in terms of ability, I might say Moeen Ali. But I'm going to go with Big Mo off EastEnders.
Oh, you motherfucker. I was going to say Big Mo.
But... It's a lady that's happy in her skin, isn't it? She's just hot as around, doing her own thing.
Goes about her business.
Yeah. Gary Oldman's sister.
Well, apparently so. And yeah. I don't know if you ever listened to the Frank Skinner podcast, like from his radio show on a Saturday morning. It's very entertaining anyway. It's basically the radio show with all the music and adverts cut out. And there you have a thing called a Big Mo, which is like what they call a big moment where you realise something that everybody, like you answer or ask an obvious question that everybody kind of knows the answer to already. And you say, oh, you, like you just said then, Big Mo, Gary Oldman's sister. Like everybody knew that already. And then you just realise it out of the blue, or you find it out and go, and everybody else goes, yeah. And
yeah,
we do that. So yeah, good, Big Mo. Well, as you've stolen mine, you know, the one that popped into my head at the back end of the last podcast was Mo Molum. And
you know, so you'd be dead.
Well, could be dead.
I suppose it is historical as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and okay. She was, you know, the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland at a time that was.
She did some really good work.
She did do some good work. And well, she's just quite funny name, Mo Molum.
Cool.
And double Mo as well. Double
Doug, Mo Molum. Doug's furiously googling famous Mo's.
So I did think you could be Mo Farah, because ultimately he's probably got a bit of cash there. He's pretty famous, he's done fairly well for himself. But then you've got the shame of having advertised corn. And me and vegans today are not on the same page by any stretch of the imagination. So I thought, actually, I'd be the Mo who's got the most money. So I'd be the Mo who's got $41 billion to their name. That's Mozambique.
Oh, you go with the whole country of Mozambique?
Yep, I am an entire country.
Love that.
30 million people at my disposal. With an average GDP of just over £1,000 at $1,000 a year each.
Okay.
I guarantee you we'll be the only podcast talking about Mozambique's GDP this week.
They've got a belting flag. Have you seen it?
They do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have, because it's currently
got
on my
Wikipedia. Yeah.
What?
I wonder if the Mozambiquis that fly their flag in their garden are known as gammons.
It's busy, isn't it? The Mozambique flag. It's a bit busy. It's a bit busy for me. It's a
three
bit too much
stripes. Three stripes, a triangle, a star, a book. A Kalashnikov with a bayonet attached, and a hoe, I think.
I mean, it's slightly.
You want to do some gardening?
Anyone else think of somebody twerking on that flag?
Yeah, I think hoes on flags should be encouraged.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Right, all of these questions are going to come from at Salty Nors. I don't know how far we'll get into them, but let's crack on.
There are some other ones on Twitter if you want to throw them in every now and then.
All right, I will do that. There was one about the Suez Canal, which would have been more relevant. Which would have been more relevant last week. In your opinion, Ben, which member of the podcast has the easiest real life job and why?
Well, it's definitely you or me, isn't it?
Potentially.
<It's... laughs> Doug's got to have some technical knowledge and has to carry his cameras around. Phil's usually shoulder deep in a cow.
Well, they're both incorrect, what you've just said, Ben, but whatever.
But,
I'll take it.
And we just sit in our houses and do stuff, really. So, I don't know.
Only if Russ's house is the golf course.
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah, I work much harder than you. Yeah, it's you.
This is unbelievable. I thought it might go this way.
The easiest way to work it out is by looking at how many holes of golf you've played in the last week. And I'll start with a zero.
Ben, hey, I'm zero.
Zero, right. Douglas?
This will be interesting.
Is it over 100 in the last week? 54 holes in the last week. Okay.
Yeah.
And Russ?
I've probably doubled that.
What?
I play pretty much every day.
How are you so shit?
It's a good question. What if you do
down your playing, mate, and do some practice?
Yeah.
Well, playing and practice. Okay. Well, we all knew what was going to happen there, right? What is your favourite story, stroke anecdote that you can repeat on the podcast? It doesn't have to be rugby related. In brackets here, there is a high bar trying to beat Russ in his flaming driveway. Now, I'm not sure how many new listeners we picked up in 2 years, but we are very, very close, if not days away, from the 2 year anniversary of Barbecue Gate. And, you know, if once you guys have thought of a funny story, or if you've got anything, I may or may not retell Firegate for people that have not heard it.
So,
okay.
Mine isn't necessarily funny, but it's a story that I like to recount frequently.
Well, it doesn't have to be funny. It's just a favourite story.
I was working at a game reserve in South Africa during my holidays from university. And we had three young male lions that we were selling to another game reserve. So darted them down, and my job was to pick up the mats that these lions were in back into this box that's about 6 foot long, 3 foot high, maybe 3 foot wide, and then hold the lion whilst the mats pulled out from underneath them, and then crawl over the top of the lion to get out of the box so that they could shut them down. First one goes in, everything goes smoothly. Just as I'm picking up the mat with the second one on, the third one lifts its head. So I turn around to the vet and went, That lion's not very sleepy. And he goes, nah, it'll be all right. It'll be fine. It's not a problem. Second one goes in. Third one, lift up the mat. By this stage, I'm motoring as quick as I can. Back into this box. And then literally, just as I put the thing that put the lion down on the floor, it lifts its head, looks at me and roars. At which point, I promptly completely fill my pants, scream like a little girl, can someone come and help me? Help me, help me. And start punching this lion in the face. Because
Hold on.
Hold on.
Wait. Did you just say out loud that you've punched a lion in the face? I want some context. How old is this lion? Is it a fully grown adult male lion?
24. What's the age of the lion?
No, if this is 4 weeks old, it's still impressive.
Mate, that's my point. If it's a lion cub that's eight months old.
So it was about three quarters size. It would have been about 100, 120 kilos, something like that. But it was, bear in mind,
so
it was like...
even a polar-sized lion, you were just punching it in the face.
Well, I had solid wood behind me, solid wood to my left, solid wood to my right, and a lion in front of me. It was my only real option. But this lion was effectively just coming round from an anaesthetic, so I didn't really know what was going on. So I thought I would just try and put it to sleep again by punching it, which did nothing other than piss it off some more. And then this South African army colonel dives into the box and then pulls a pistol out of his belt and then starts hitting the lion on the head. Whilst I climb,
you're punching
it. Pistol whipping a lion.
At which point I scramble over the top of it.
Pistol whip lions.
Slam the door down, stick it on the back of the lorry, and off it goes.
Amazing.
But yeah, never been closer to death than I was there.
Pistol whipped lion.
That answers the what's the most impressive animal you've ever punched question that we have lined up for later, isn't it?
Yeah, we won't bother with that one now. Good story, Phil. That is a very good story. Ben, what about you?
Oh, follow that. Fantastic.
Follow punching a lion.
Yeah. I was on holiday in Mozambique I decked a giraffe.
From a ladder? Climb a tree?
Just jumped out of a tree house, just smacked it, landed on my feet, commando roll, ran away, tripped over a zebra, flight home, done.
One punch knocked him out.
Yeah. Smashed it.
There's a cow on me. Doug.
Yeah, I mean, probably my most embarrassed I've ever been was when I was in the RAF and we were driving from Kuwait to Basra. And when you get to the border of Iraq and Kuwait, which, by the way, interesting story, there's a like half mile strip of no man's land, because when the border between the two countries was drawn on a map at the end of the Second World War with a felt-tip pen. So there's a big bit of no man's land between the two countries. When you get to the border, you have to fill up the vehicle. It was a minibus, so I thought it was diesel, so I filled it up with unleaded. We then promptly had to drive through deepest Iraq for to Basra Airport through Umkasar, which was quite violent at the time, spitting 5-foot flames out the back of a minibus, trying to be covert. We got to got to Basra International Airport, where everyone's IDs was being checked and the bus was idling. And as the driver, which wasn't me, by the way, pulled away, it set off a huge backfire, which sent about 30 RAF regiment gunners scarpering for every piece of cover they could find, rifles being cocked. And poor, just little old me in a Suzuki Vitara behind this van, shitting my pants, thinking I'd start. So, yeah, probably not my finest hour.
I mean, both of those stories, discounting Ben's for a second. Sorry, Ben.
Because it's a lie.
Which one of these is a lie? I think Phil's punching a lion story may well have topped Firegate as the funniest story ever to be told on the podcast.
Nothing beats Firegate.
You punch the lion.
You must fear no one.
Oh, no. I'm petrified.
What are you going to do, mate? I've literally had a fight with a lion.
And survived.
I mean, it was doused up on Nitol. It was slightly drowsy. So for those of you that haven't, those long-term listeners, I apologise for this. But any new listeners in the last 2 years that may or may not have heard this story, it was a Saturday evening. I'd come home from golf and I decided, let's stick the barbecue on. But I've been cutting the grass during the day. So I've lit the barbecue on the...
I can't believe this happened.
I've lit the barbecue with some bits of paper and some fire lighters and a match and all the usual way you light a barbecue. But it was quite windy and I've got quite a long drive. It's probably about, I don't know, let's say 40 metres long. You know, I've got a 40 metre long drive. And And it's a bit of a wind tunnel. So I've lit this barbecue and the petrol can where I used to fill the lawnmower was relatively close. So I thought, I better move that. So as I pick it up, the wind whips around the driveway in the wind tunnel and a burning ember comes off the barbecue and catches the edge of the jerry can, which just so happened the lid was not securely fastened on. So all of a sudden there is a sort of a small flame that then appears on the jerry can, and the lid has fallen off. And as Doug, you know, mentioned, when the minibus backfired, and Phil, when the lion woke up, I kind of shat my pants, and all fire training that I'd ever received, you know, all logical thinking kind of goes out the window. So I've tried to move this, like I've tried to sway this jerry can out the way. And all I've done is proceeded in spilling more petrol over the edge of the jerry can. So now I've literally got a flamethrower in my hand with a jerry can with flames bursting out the top. So in my infinite wisdom, I decide to leg it down the driveway in my flip-flops with a full jerry can that's on fire. Petrol spill, because I'm, you know, not the most fleet of foot. Petrol is excuse me. Petrol is
outrun fire.
Yeah, you can't outrun fire. Petrol is spilling everywhere, to the point where I drop the petrol can because my legs are on fire because I've spilt petrol on my legs. And I've managed to drop the petrol can right next to the front near side wheel of my missus's car. So now, in the space of about 12 seconds, I've gone from having a nice, serene sort of barbecue experience to a petrol can on fire, which has subsequently set fire to my missus's car on the near side front wing. Panicking that the car's going to go up like a scene from Thunderball. I've ran round the car, flicked my flip-flops off. My legs are still on fire at this point. I've ran round the front of the car, back up the driver's side.
Sorry, that's just said so casually. I've run round the car, my legs are still on fire at this point.
Yeah, but I've gone round the front of the car, up past the driver's side door, back round the back of the car, and I thought the only option I've got to get rid of this petrol can from right next to the car, both things are ablaze, is to volley, basically drill this petrol can into the middle of the road. So
whilst your legs are already on fire.
Whilst my legs are already on fire, I've got no shoes or socks on.
Flip-flops melting into your foot.
Yeah, what I didn't know whether I mentioned first time is that obviously at this point, the front wing of the car is starting to melt onto the concrete. And I've legged it down. I've volleyed this petrol can into the middle of the road, spilling more petrol on my legs and my feet, reigniting already burnt legs. But I've also managed to step in molten sort of plastic that is dripped from the front wing. So the underside of my right foot is stepping in molten plastic. My left foot has just volleyed a petrol can into the middle of the road. I've then legged it back to the garage, you know, obviously up 20, 30 metres away, up to the garage to grab the hose to come and start putting the fire out. And so I've turned the water on, I've legged it down with the hose. But I know, in a rational state of mind, that the hose doesn't reach the front of the driveway. It's not long enough. So I've ran down the drive with the water coming out of the hose, only to pull the hose off of the tap. So now I've got an empty hose in my hand with some pretty burnt legs and feet and water just pissing out in my garage. Just like, I've got a flood in the garage and a fire on the driveway. And what can you do? And at this point, my children and my
missus... So many different things.
And at this point, my missus and my kids are in the living room, and Erin, who's now 11, has sort of looked out the window and gone, God, it's a bit smoky outside. What's daddy doing? And obviously, to see me running around like a headless chicken with sort of gorilla buckets full of water and all sorts of stuff when I was just supposed to be outside cooking some sausages. So, yeah, some first degree burns later on the old legs and feet. And yeah, there you go. That was fire story. And then the local fire department turned up.
What made me laugh, because I wasn't on the podcast where you told this story originally. I was on holiday. And I was listening to it on the beach, and people were walking away from me because I was laughing so hard at this. But the bit that made me laugh is Doug in the background just went, £1.24 a litre.
Yeah, literally just throwing it away.
Yeah.
It's the little details that you forget over time, like the hose pipe anecdote. It just makes it.
I'm sure there's an episode of The Simpsons where Homer sets himself on fire and you can just see him running past the window and the kids are just watching the TV, and that's the kind of mental image I've got of it.
It's just the amount of different thought. I know, at no point did you think, just take your jacket off and put the fire out on your legs.
Yeah, mate, the you know, this, the whole story could have been negated if I just put the petrol can down when it caught fire. Just put it down. and it would have just sat there. It would have sat there isolated and burnt itself out. Or I could have gone into the kitchen and got like a wet towel, just put it over the top.
So, like I said, but
there's nothing funny about that.
So many different things.
But nature takes over. You're naturally a kicker, so you think, "What am I going to do? I'm going to punt this, absolutely. Punt this burning can over the road."
If I was Young Hui Koo, or Matt Prater, say, or who was the guy who got drafted, Robbie Aguayo. I mean, it was impressive, to say the least.
It's a good job you were never a second row, because you'd have just tucked it up under your arm and trucked yourself into the car, knocked yourself unconscious.
I would literally, if there was some way that was caught on a security camera or something.
Your neighbour's got security cameras.
No. There is a viral video on Twitter about a guy.
He's trying
to throw petrol on the fire in the garden, and then just everything goes up around him. Just imagine that kind of scenario, but instead of
the fence burning, it was
it's
your
a car and the car.
I think it'd make a good case file.
It absolutely would. And fire hurts. Let me make no mistake about that. Nothing has ever hurt me physically as much. Broken bones, whatever. Those burns.
I do often wonder about that. You think about Niki Lauda.
Yeah.
The pain he must have been in with like a burn windpipe.
Yeah.
Where he was, mental.
Just utterly, utterly mental.
But in your case, extremely funny.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right, let's move on. There we go. I mean, we're 33 minutes in. We've answered like two or three questions. So this is going well so far. Here's one for you, Doug, specifically. It's from the Cornish Incomer. Why did the lensman block me on Twitter? Is it something to do with Vior? And I'm guessing you don't know.
If I blocked someone on Twitter, it was probably because of a strong left-wing political tweet. Probably something along those lines. Probably nothing personal. I'd probably just really disagree with your political views.
It's nothing personal. I just really disagree with you.
Yeah. I've very little time for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Fair enough.
My block list is essentially extremely left wing, new agey people. You know, Josh Gardner, Catherine Cabana. There would have been a tweet somewhere down the line that I disagreed with strongly enough to hit the block button.
There you go. You asked, and you should.
And I mean, to be fair, Cornish Incomer, you're missing nothing other than food pictures.
Interestingly, when I search the hashtag Ask Mo Anything, which is what I asked for, there's a tweet here from the 17th of February 2014. Which is Christopher Douglas, and it's directed at Maurice Edu.
Okay.
And do you wish you had stayed at Rangers, Maurice Edu? Do you think Maurice Edu wishes he stayed at Rangers?
Well, it depends what when he was playing for them. I mean, if he was playing for them when they were in Scottish Division 2, then and he got a more lucrative offer, then probably not.
Yeah, I mean, he was supposed to be the next big thing, wasn't he? But
wasn't that Freddie Adu?
Oh, is that not the same guy?
No, he went different people. He went from Rangers to Stoke, where he played one game, then went on loan to Bursaspor, Philadelphia, and Bethlehem Steel.
Bethlehem Street.
Is that a
real shit Sesame Street with a religious tilt?
To take this down a slightly rugby route. Why would anyone, like you say, went to play in Philadelphia? I think if you're a professional sportsman, America's got to be the greatest country on earth to live in, right?
Yeah, potentially, depending on what your sport is, I guess. Yeah.
Do you regret leaving Rangers to go and play for Philadelphia? No. Next question.
Well, he left Rangers to go and play for Stoke.
Yes. I mean, so it's just Mars go south, right?
Well, yeah. It's swapping one shithole for another.
It's like a really shit suburb of Glasgow.
Yeah, we've got a mutual friend, haven't we, Russ? From
we have. He won't listen to this. But he is an absolute walloper. And he'll thank me for saying that.
He will.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Let's have another random question. Other than niche podcasting superstardom, Doug, what is your claim to fame? What's your biggest claim to fame?
Oh God, you really should have given me these questions pre-podcast, shouldn't you?
Well, maybe. I mean, I can come back to you.
Is that specifically for me? I mean, does anyone else like
it? No, it's for everybody. I just happen to come to you first.
Yeah, come back to me. I'll have a think. Because there's so many, I've got to narrow it down.
Ben.
Right. Let me take you back to 1497.
37 minutes past three.
I don't know what kind of clock you use. So yeah, 1497, Henry the VII is King of England, and he decides to start a scrap with the Scots, and the people of Cornwall, quite rightly, are a little bit annoyed about getting taxed by this, because they've got no quarrel with the Scots, because the Six Nations hasn't started yet. There was a Cornish rebellion, and a chap called Thomas Fermanc was one of the leaders, and Angoff was the other one, and they marched all the way to London with an army, and as soon as they saw the king's army, they promptly surrendered. Thomas Fermanc, who was hung, drawn, and quartered, is some kind of ancestor of my mum's. But the family tree, someone in Canada did a lot of research on it, and it gets lost somewhere in the 17th or 18th century. So I can actually claim to be the direct descendant with as much evidence as anyone else can, which means if it wasn't for Henry the VII, I'd live in a nice manor house.
What a wanker.
Yeah.
Just says a lot.
So with that in mind,
you can come round and visit at some point, Ben, that's fine.
Yeah, thanks, Philman. Boscarn Manor, that would have been my house. Do you know what's there now? Camel Valley Winery. I could just imagine me on my balcony of my manor.
Drinking shit English wine.
It's very nice, actually. Drinking my lovely sparkling wine.
If you're listening, Camel Valley,
watching
we're open to sponsorship.
Talk. Yeah.
Watching the peasants going down the camel trail.
I'm persuaded that you're not shit. Like every other English wine. Which is basically grape juice.
Watching the peasants toil. Yeah. Lovely. I could just see myself doing that. So, yeah, I'm just basically a rebel, as you know.
Well, I mean, as everybody who has ever listened to this podcast knows, you are the most rebellious member of the podcast and probably one of the most rebellious people in Cornwall.
So. Well, your middle name is Danger, isn't it, Ben?
Yes.
Yeah. You're just waiting, Ben, aren't you, for the next time that Westminster comes to try and take over Cornwall and us unnecessarily?
Actually, if I'd known, Boris Johnson was at Heron Sands the other day.
He was.
You'd have been there with your placard.
Yeah.
My great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddad, maybe, didn't give up his life for nothing.
Give me back my winery.
Phil,
if you watch the funeral of Princess Diana, when the princes come out of the palace that they're living in to join the procession, you can see me and my friend Gonch right in the front row of the crowd.
Can you? You went to Princess Diana's funeral?
Yeah, we were in the pub and we were really pissed and said, let's go to Princess Diana's funeral. So we went.
So you were you just 18 at that point, that summer of 1997?
97, maybe, or 96? I can't remember.
Was it 96?
I was at college. I was at Harlow College, and Lawrence was a photography student. And we said, oh, let's go down and get some pictures. And we got on a train from Harlow to Liverpool Street, got to Liverpool Street, realised neither of us had a camera.
went to the news agents, got a disposable.
Let's get some pictures. Here's my pad and my charcoal pencil.
So yeah, if you watch that back on YouTube, and you'll see a young Chinese lensman peering over the barrier, front row,
with a little sign, "Free the Bodmin One."
Yeah, yeah.
That's quite relatively topical, isn't it? After this weekend, I mean, Ben hates the monarchy. Doug was at a monarch's funeral.
Yep. In a weird quirk of fate, my boss at my old company, Telegenic, that was one of his first jobs in television. I was stood at that little barrier. He then gave me my job. He's now gone freelance, and I booked him for his first freelance job.
The wheels
are constantly turning, and I'm in the middle of all of them.
Doug is
on the sports TV gravy train.
Yeah,
Doug's quite a big deal when it comes to sports video games.
Unfortunately, so I've had this pencil booking for the last 5 years that I was going to be a cameraman on Phil's funeral, but COVID's scuppered that.
Prince Phil. I thought you meant our Phil.
Yeah.
Is there something you don't? Is something you're telling him? Is that an actual fact?
It was meant to be like it was meant to be, you know.
His funeral was meant to have been 5 years ago.
Mate, it's been planned for the last, literally since I've been in television, hers and his funeral have been planned.
That's very different from saying his funeral was meant to have been 5 years ago.
There was an article a couple of years ago in The Guardian, because despite reviews, I'm a Guardian reader. And it was what happens when the Queen dies, and it's all planned.
I can't remember what. I think all of the royals' funerals are given names of bridges.
Yeah, it's London Bridge is the Queen.
Yeah,
and
is Philip Putney?
No,
is that Edward?
No, he's the fourth bridge. Isn't it?
I think it is the fourth River Kwai, bridge. Wasn't it? Yeah.
River Kwai.
But apparently they've got two playlists. Every radio station has got two playlists, basically sad and saddest.
Sad and sadist.
But I think it was George the Fifth. I think they.
What was his playlist?
A lot of musicals.
Just banging out the classic Beethoven.
Were you down to do cameras on that as well, Doug?
But the doctor killed him. They were like, he's going to die today, but if we kill him now, it can be announced in the Times. But if we let it go a couple of hours, it will be in all the evening papers, which is a bit vulgar. So they basically pumped him full of opium. So it could be announced in the
morning.
Incredible.
I mean,
his funeral's basically gone from like needing 60 or 70 cameramen to like 5.
Could probably do it on a drone, couldn't they? An internal camera on a tripod.
Yeah.
Surprised Harry's not doing it. Phil, I mean, like, we've gone from talking about our claims to fame to royal funerals, which is quite incredible. You won't get this anywhere else, folks. Phil, what's your claim to fame?
No, it's not actually that. I was on John Craven's News Round when I finished runner-up in the Cub Scout Chatterbox competition of 1993.
That was mid-yew tree as well, wasn't it? You did well. Yep.
was John Craven ever named in Yew Tree, or was he always a
he probably died before he got fingered for
Still alive.
He's still alive.
For Oh, I'm not having John Craven. If he's alive, he must be older than Prince Philip.
Let me tell you one person who never got fingered, in inverted commas, on U-tree, but his haircut would suggest otherwise, is Nutkins.
Oh, no.
Yeah, John Craven's still alive. He's 80.
The irony of using fingered as well.
Absolutely. Did he get his finger bitten off by a ferret or something?
Was it an otter?
Was it an otter?
Yeah.
Fucking Nutkins.
Just balls deep in an otter.
Well, he would have been two fingers deep before he lost one. Oh, my gosh. I mean, who knows? Right. So you were on Newsrun, Phil. Well, along a similar line, actually. 1996, maybe 97. I'm trying to think when there was election. My mum's cousin used to be the editor of Live and Kicking. Do you remember Live and Kicking?
Yeah.
Schofield and
what's her name? She was really fit.
Philippa Forrester.
Forrester, yeah.
And then it was, they were superseded by Theakston and Zoe Ball. And Zoe Ball was a very attractive young lady in those Labette type days. And anyway, if you remember on a Saturday morning, they used to have a group of basically stage school kids that used to sit around and mince about and ask questions to the celebrities and all that sort of stuff. You know, the Sylvia Young generation kids that just used to, they used to wheel out week after week. Anyway, because Chris was the editor, me and my sister got to go on a couple of times. And I asked a question to Robbie. I was on Live and Kicking and asked a question to Robbie Williams. And I think the clip is still on YouTube somewhere. I'll see if I can dig it out and clip
he
it.
He knows exactly where it is, man. Oh, yeah.
Philippa Forrester. Emma Forbes was another one.
Emma Forbes was the other one, yeah.
Yeah. Zoe Ball was there when I did it. She was lovely. But yeah, so I asked the question to Robbie Williams about the general election. Can you imagine that? It was after he just left Take That, released Old Before I Die. And
I don't know who would have cared less about that question, you or him.
I know, yeah. I was also...
I also can imagine you with your little ginger curly hair.
And an earring.
Shirt, three buttons down.
Yeah, I think I was wearing a shirt. I'll find it anyway.
I was also
involved on the other time that I was Live and Kicking. I was involved in a little skit with Trevor and Simon. Do you remember those two wallopers?
Moon Monkey.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were introducing a segment, doing their usual sort of skittish comedy type bit. And I was wearing this. Do you remember like mid 90s? Like the spliffy jeans and amnesia type stuff, tops and all that sort of. Do you remember like Fido Dido and spliffy and all that sort of shit with the jeans with the straps on? So I had a pair of those and had this top on. It said amnesia on it, and it was just this weird sort of logo type thing. And what the joke was that, you know, they were on about, oh, I really want something to eat, and he said, oh, I really fancy some of that rice pudding. I can't remember what it's called. I think it might be amnesia. And then in this real harsh West Country sort of Bristolian accent, there's this kid that stood next to him and goes, oh, I think you'll find that's ambrosia. And yeah, horrible. It makes me cringe just thinking about it. But that actually happened. So
I want to see it.
I'll find it. I'll clip it up and I'll find it for you. And I'll put it on the Mall Over feed at some point this week. And I'll put it on rather than the whole thing. I'll just do my bit.
Russ has gone, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yep. It's a shame.
Slag him off. He's so shame. Fat. Look how fat he is.
I think he should get the earring back.
Oh, I do. I can remember like being out on the piss with Russ a few times and just marvelling at how much he sweats as a human being. I don't think this is going to be recording, is it? If he's
well, it still says Mueller's recording the call.
Right. So where did we get to? Oh, I was just finishing off my story about live and kicking. So that was cool. Let's find another question. How long were we going for then before it all?
You literally got to the end of your story and then you cut out. Yeah.
Okay, right. So another question from at Salty Knaws. Let's have a look here. Which member of the pod is consistently the biggest shithouse on a sports field? Do you reckon?
Well, I've only played sport with one of you, so my default answer is you, Russ. Although you weren't such a shithouse as a lazy shit.
I mean, yeah, fair enough.
I wouldn't... obviously, Ben's the nicest guy in Cornish rugby podcasting history who should be living in a manor house. And I've never seen Ben do anything vaguely shithousery on a rugby pitch. I think you're just too nice or I'm too far away when you do it. Because I'm lying on the floor blowing out my arse. Russ just kind of throws his toys out at the Bram a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I've seen Russ properly lose it on the beach because he got in beach rugby because he got called for his knee going down on the sand. And oh, but I tripped! I tripped! It wasn't on purpose! Properly lose it with a ref. Yeah. Phil Morris was having none of it.
I mean, if you're talking physically, it's probably Phil because I remember playing in a charity game and then, but it was against Phil's old club and he came out swinging. But in terms of referees, it's Russ. For sure.
Yeah, I hate referees.
Yeah.
In all ways, shape or form, I really hate referees. Mostly because they're the people that never got picked at school. So they would just want to ruin everybody else's day.
So I did. I played a game once with... I'm sure he doesn't listen, so I'll say it anyway. I played a game once with Andrew Parker refereeing, who was one of the vets at Clifton Villa Vets. And I knew who he was. And I'm not entirely sure he knew who I was. It would be fair to say the practice I was working for and the practice he was working for didn't necessarily get along that well. And I was on the ground, lying on the floor, and he was running backwards to mark where a penalty was. And I thought, I'm not going to miss this opportunity. So I stuck my leg out and tripped him over whilst he was running backwards and then disappeared quickly. So he didn't know who it was.
I did once get penalised for being patronising.
If you're talking about ridiculous reasons for getting punished on a sports field.
I think
Doug, you're a nine. Surely it's going to be you every time.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But it isn't.
Do you know what? Sorry, I was just putting my drink back. I haven't played enough rugby to feel confident enough to be gobby on a rugby pitch, mainly because I'm terrified of everyone. Whereas on a football pitch, I'm a different animal.
Yeah. There was. I played a little bit at nine, probably 15 years ago, and I did try all the different tricks. Like at the scrum on their put in, you stand in the laces of their scrum half so that when he tries to run around the back, he trips over, knocking the ball out of his hands as he's about to put it in, like sticking your fingers down his socks, just anything just to try and piss him off if the ref's on the other side. And I did quite enjoy that, but I got smacked a fair few times for it.
Oh, mate, on the football pitch, I can remember playing for RAF Wittering against somebody or other. And I was playing fullback and their winger, I just kept digging. Every time we tackled, went in for a tackle, I'd get up and stand on his foot. Pulling his armpit hairs, Dennis Wise style. And we went in for a tackle and I got up and stood on his ankle. He said, you do that again, I'm going to punch you so many times you think you've been ambushed. And I was like, mate, that's A, a shit line, and B, no, you won't. So I did it the next time. And sure enough, he got up and he smacked me about five times. And we both got sent off, which was the worst bit. But yeah, on a rugby field, no. I've only ever had words. I think I've told you the majority of my rugby ones. There was the centre who larruped our winger in a tackle, literally concertinaed him and did the old big, you know, the woo thing that is...
Oh, the Ric Flair
thing. And I called him a
I said, you better shut your fucking mouth, you fringe, or I'm going to do that to you. And calling him a fringe seemed to enjoy his forwards. His own forwards seemed to enjoy that quite a lot. But yeah, everyone on the rugby, I just have the default position that when I run onto a rugby field, everyone has the ability to stove my face in. So I just try to get through it.
Yeah. Survive.
Yeah. But Russ, you can attest to my...
mate, I think we've obviously told this story before, but you getting sent off for calling me a fat cunt when we were on the same team is one of the best reasons to get sent off I think I've ever seen. you can't argue with it.
But he is ref.
But he is. I'm only stating a fact. I love the fact that you said that as he was pulling out the red card. Yeah, but he is. look at him. Unbelievable. Right, I've got two more questions, right? They're both almost rugby related. So AKA WD40, one of our long-time listeners. He said, has Eddie Jones's loyalty to the human pork pie that is JB George cost Luke Cowan-Dickie a Lions spot? I don't actually think that he has. If anything, he's made him more Lions worthy. Don't know what anybody else thinks about that. But human pork pie makes me laugh.
He's gonna get in the squad, and then Gatland will pick based on how they perform in camp. But I'd be amazed if Cowan-Dickie doesn't go unless he's injured.
I think Eddie Jones has probably cost 10 England players their line spots.
Yeah.
Just not him.
Yeah, agree. And the other question from AKA WD40 is, Harv, going back to our dictator chat from earlier today, which was which famous dictator wins a Royal Rumble?
Henry VIII. Fucking massive.
You've gone size. I mean... Earthquake and Typhoon didn't win many Royal Rumbles between them, did they? Got to think outside the box.
No, but
if we're bringing Kings
into this.
He's
proven himself to be ruthless. He's got no issues going over the top with punishments. And he's fucking massive.
If we're going Kings with this, there's any number of Plantagenets that are kicking Henry VIII around the ring.
I mean, you've just used the word that I've no idea what it is.
Russ showing his
Kings. Kings are the male leaders of countries.
Year five.
Plantagenets.
Yeah.
What's a Plantagenet?
It's a crossword for gardeners.
They were the kings before the Tudors.
Ah, right. Okay.
Famously bad tempered.
French.
Very yeah. French. Yeah.
Surrender monkeys then.
Pol Pot.
Pol Pot. Not Paul, not to be confused with Pol Pot.
Because he turned the ring into a mass grave.
But they got to go over the top to get out. It's a Royal Rumble.
Well, we could.
If they stick in a grave, it's fine.
Well, you're last still, man out. Still in the ring. You get over the top, you're the last man out. You're winning. And no one's got more experience of putting people in big holes than Pol Pot.
I wouldn't look too far away from Saddam Hussein, you know. I think Saddam, you know, he would hide out
so
sort of early doors. Huh? So woke. What with my up-to-date references? I think he would hide out...
2000s.
Yeah. He would hide out early, sort of just creep under the radar a little bit, maybe hide under the floorboards of the ring, and then, just come out when there's only a couple of people left.
I'll tell you who would be
somebody with a chair.
Robert Mugabe would be shit because he would go in there and give it the big bollocks from the start and then just get tossed out minute one.
Mugabe would be one of those dictators that everybody else wanted to get out.
But he'd be the one that runs down the ramp at full speed, runs straight into the ring.
Yeah.
And slides straight over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, I don't mind Mugabe. as far as dictators go.
Yeah, I mean, as far as dictators go, Mugabe's up there, sure.
Oh, wow. Anyway, right, so the last question I'm going to ask... Sorry, Ben. Did you not answer?
Idi Amin.
Idi Amin. That is big a unit. Great answer.
Big unit. Wasn't he a boxer or a rugby player or something?
He was a boxer, wasn't he? Didn't he have some sort of world championship fight? So he was definitely the champion on. champion boxer of what do you call it?
I want to say
I nearly said the Yemen.
Uganda. 6 foot four, Ugandan light heavyweight boxing champion.
I mean, six foot four is a light heavyweight. I'm gonna question those scales.
6 foot four.
43 children.
Yeah. According
to, it's an estimate.
That's they an extremely don't... virile man.
Yeah. Good rugby player, apparently.
I mean, he'd be as good as whatever he told you he was good at.
He's already got his wrestling name sorted. He's already got a nickname, the Machete.
Eddie the Machete.
Oh, very good. Idi Amin. No one thought of that. That's a good film. What's that film with
Last King of Scotland?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, he served in the British Army for 16 years.
Who? Amin?
Yeah.
I suppose that's where the Scottish reference comes in. That's where
he was at Sandhurst, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for the King's African Rifles.
Yeah.
Prince Harry went to Sandhurst. There you go. Right, last question for this round of Ask MO Anything, right, is probably one of my favourite, and it's kind of twofold. What flavour curries would Tom and Ben be?
So I saw this and I thought, I really need to think about that. And obviously I haven't.
can you have like a gorilla curry?
What, as a meat?
A gorilla madras.
It would be a bit tough, wouldn't it? I wouldn't like to eat it.
A bit spicy. Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be, you know, a poorly constructed lamb. just have real tough bits. But be very tasty. Maybe a lamb Jalfrezi or something.
I think Tom would be like a Jalfrezi and Ben would be something just not quite so hot.
Similar, but
not quite so spicy.
I think they'd be the same kind of curry, but one would be lamb and one would be chicken.
Right.
Slightly, just depending on your preference, you go for one or the other. But I was thinking something like a madras, a good all-rounder. Quite hot, but not mental hot. Bit tasty.
Nothing. Like mental hot. Like which rugby player would you put in the foul category then? Like Mickey Skinner.
Well, I mean, the foul is no longer the standard bearer for hot curries, in my opinion.
Okay.
That would be the naga.
Naga.
If you get a naga on a menu, you know you're looking at some potential rectal bleeding.
Some Matsuyama.
Serious. Case of
organ failure.
Well, heartburn. You're going to be eating plenty of Rennie that night.
So what you're looking at there is a bit more of a one-trick pony of a back rower. So you could say maybe Billy.
When you went
Billy circa 4 years ago,
Bismarck Duplessis.
Do you think Bismarck would be a naga?
Just having Bismarck in his name. If I had to tackle anyone called Bismarck, I'd be making business decisions.
We missed him in the dictator section, didn't we, Bismarck? I bet he could handle himself.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. No doubt. Any other rugby players as foodstuffs?
I think Eddie Jones would like to think he's a naga, but really is a passander.
I don't even think he gets.
I think
Tamana. He's like a butter chicken.
I think Tamana Harrison is a what's the lentil one? A Dansack. Because he's kind of nearly there. He's just not quite up to the job.
I love a Dansack.
So do I, but I wouldn't pick one to play for England.
One of our podcast titles was an underspiced Dansack.
In a hotel
somewhere.
Yeah.
Eating an underspiced Dansack.
Yeah. I subsequently learned through my foray into curry's cooking that the underlying and key thing to any curry is the base sauce. Yeah. So if you have a curry house that makes a particularly unspicy base sauce, then their curries will be particularly unspicy.
I think Johnny Wilkinson would be a korma because he's smooth and creamy and just delicious. But quite bland now.
Korma's a shit, man.
Kormas are real shit. And I don't can't believe you called Johnny Wilkinson shit.
But they're great when I'm 12. So
Yeah.
If that was the case, it'd be a secret.
If we ever do get to go for a mall over curry, and if anyone orders a korma, I'm leaving.
If anyone orders a korma, they're getting a naga shoved directly up their rectum. Skip the stomach, take the pain.
Can you think of any other? Have you got any other rugby players that could double as, or you could attribute as foodstuffs that spring to mind?
Shabazz Akeemanan. I don't really know why.
Joe Marler as the egg and chips that's always on the menu for the person that doesn't like it.
Okay, chicken and chips.
Fish and chips at an Indian.
No idea why it's there. No one wants it. It was good in the 70s.
Banter. No one wants that banter on an Indian menu.
I have actually been on it for a curry and someone had scampi and chips.
Yeah, me too. There was a guy at my old workplace, Sean Mulhern, because we used to go to curries all the time and he would always order either chicken and chips, egg and chips. What are you even here for?
He was there because we'd gone to watch cricket Edgbaston and we'd found this amazing curry house in Basingstoke. And
You went to watch cricket Edgbaston.
Were you driving back from Edgbaston and went down the M3?
No, you wouldn't even.
Basingstoke. Somewhere else.
Cheltenham.
Was it on the Hagley Road, Ben, in Birmingham?
No, it was outside of
Bromsgrove.
Bromsgrove, that's it.
Yeah. Easily mistaken.
Yeah.
Couldn't understand why we missed the first session.
take the man out of Cornwall.
And so the lad we were with was like, I hate curry. And we were like, well,
tough.
This is where we're eating. So he ended up having scampi and chips. But they did sprinkle some coriander on it, so.
Love a bit of coriander, got to be honest. I know this has been an Ask More Over Anything podcast that's probably been going on a bit too long already. But as far as any other business is concerned, I just wanted to talk very quickly about the 100. And have you seen the news today about the 100 that is, they're not going to be called wickets in the 100. They're going to be called outs.
Yeah, which aptly describes what I feel about the 100.
I'm out. I mean, have you seen...
Although I am working on about 10 games of it this year.
Okay, so whilst you'll remain completely impartial for this next...
Hate the 100, love bit, money.
Yeah.
Did you see the presenting lineup? Have you seen the presenting lineup for the 100?
I may or may not have had a little WhatsApp message about that.
You may or may not have done. So the lineup has got Freddie Flintoff at the front and centre. Great idea. Probably the most recognisable cricket-based person in the UK ever. I suppose if you were to put him there...
Ian Botham might have something to say about that.
But... Yeah, but I suppose when you're looking at, you know, the people they're trying to entice in for the 100... Freddie Flintoff is on Top Gear and shit now in a league of their own, isn't he? So the most people would recognise him. He's then flanked by, four people on each side in a flying Mighty Ducks formation, which in the corners of this Mighty Ducks formation is Stuart Broad and Kevin Peterson. And then there's a collection of people in the middle that 99.99% of people in the world will have no clue who these people are, but they are literally handpicked from every stage of society. And
so the whole
demographic, that's correct. And they've, point about so the what they've done, what they've done, so what they've done is they've put three middle-aged white men, ironically, in the corners of this V, and then filled the rest of it with people from all walks of life, which obviously I've got no problem with, but it just
looks
like
fucking awful.
It looks really, really strange. And it looks like they forced it.
But I mean, your traditional thing would be to have your three key people who people are going to recognise front and centre. And they've obviously tried to stick Brodie and KP out of the sides to for those kind of armchair cricket fans who would recognise them, go, oh, they got them as well. But the whole point of the hundreds to try and attract more people to cricket. And the people it wants to attract probably don't know who KP and Stuart Broad are anyway, or wouldn't recognise them from the photo. They might know their names. So what it ends up looking like is Freddie and a load of groupies around him rather than a presenting team. Because none of them are dressed like they're ready to present things either. They look like it's kind of Freddie and Mufti Day at the local tech college.
You know what it looks like to me? Focused group sport.
Mm.
It's like they've gone, but the people that were in the focus group were people that, you know,
hate sport,
were in the same demographic that voted for Brexit and are on cricket club committees.
Yeah.
And they've gone, you know what we need to do, Nige? We need to get some people in here. They keep going on about women. So we'll get some women. And we need someone from each section of society, right? So who do you think? And then someone's gone, what about that Connie Huckbird from Blue Peter? Yeah, get her in. I don't know if she's in it or not because I haven't looked. But it is literally like somebody has just gone, okay, how can we please everyone on Twitter?
Yeah.
Except cricket fans.
And you know the people who are best placed. You know the people that are best placed to answer questions on diversity is even older middle-aged white men in the ECB.
To be fair, Connie Huck's married to Charlie Brooker, isn't she?
Yeah.
So they could
better. She's a lovely person. Yeah.
If it turned out that the 100 was just a very sort of niche episode of Black Mirror, I wouldn't be that surprised because it's that stupid and that ridiculous.
I was going to say the 100 in itself is like it's come from a focus group. It's come from, well, we've got this idea of the bat and a ball. So how can we make having a bat and a ball more appealable? Well, 20 overs, people get confused by what's an over. Let's pick a nice round number. Let's call it 100. They don't understand what a wicket is. So let's call it an out. But my big issue with it from a diversity perspective is there's no fatties in there. They're all skinny people. So they're effectively body shaming us through their presenting team.
Jesus.
He
looks like he's, yeah.
I love Freddie.
I'll save that for a non-public forum.
In my opinion, all of sport, and I think I've said this before, but all of sport is basically desperately trying to get new people involved. Every sport isn't football. All about new people. And every single one of them does not give one single fuck about the people that already like it.
Because they'll assume that you'll still be there because you already like it.
Yeah, but they'll drive everyone away.
The same
if they get rid of the 4-day cricket for some Bobbins gimmick like the 100, God help us.
Christ, even the promo thing for the 100 with the team captains of the men's and the women's teams, it looks like some failed auditions from a boy band.
I've told you this before, and I think we may have even discussed it here. The way to solve the inequality thing around cricket and the money and all of that sort of stuff would be to create a cricket competition. If everybody wants to be equal, then let's have some mixed cricket sides. Let's have some mixed teams. And then let's watch Ben Stokes absolutely larrup a lady bowler.
Lady bowler.
300 meters down the Hagley Road at Edgbaston, and we'll watch Joffa Archer taking people's heads off.
I'm here for that. Now that I would watch.
Absolutely, that would
Did
get
you, have you
in.
Seen them?
And if and if us, and if and when, if and when, sorry Phil, if and when, Meg Lanning stands up and straight pulls Joffa Archer for six, I will be the first person to stand up and applaud it.
Yep,
absolutely no problem.
Well, it's a bit like the jockey that won the Grand National, isn't it? Like she's in a sport where she's competing against men, and
well, she's competing against horses. Like
she's standing on the back of a horse.
Absolutely. So actually, if there was ever a sport where women should have been already equal before the 20th century, it would have been in horse riding and jockey.
Keep looking for smaller and smaller fellas. Just get a girl.
Absolutely. John Joe O'Neill and Willie Mullins have finally cracked it. It's only taken them 500 years.
I know you're only in 95% serious, but all credit to her. She's
absolutely
sitting on a horse.
It was incredible. And I sat and watched it with new Mrs. Lensman and the Lenslets and the female Lenslet. She was really, it was really
uplifting.
I put a bet on for everyone on Betfair. We all lost, but Georgie, she bet on a female jockey, and she was like, "No, I want one of the girls." And it was fantastic.
Don't be stupid. Don't bet on a girl.
And she was champion. She was champion jockey at Cheltenham, yeah. Right? There's no accident. But I'm not just 95% serious, Phil. I'm 100% serious. Right? I know there is more to it than just sitting on the back of a horse.
I know that.
But if ever there was a sport where men and women could
gender
compete,
makes no difference.
It just makes no difference. It should have never made any difference. But why is it only
a disadvantage to have bollocks, right?
But there's plenty of sports where
less exempted than beforehand in one of the females.
There's plenty of sports where you could do mixed competitions and it makes no difference. Curling. It makes fuck all difference to curling. Makes it harder to brush if you've got them in the way. But
I am up there, like the cricket, I am all up there for mixed sport in general, right? If it's completely separate to the leagues that already exist, if people want to create mixed sport because everybody wants to be equal, everybody wants the same rights, the same money, the same whatever, like, if people are going to watch it, it needs to be a marketable commodity. The money, people need to understand the money comes from the marketing, and for marketing, people need to watch it, so people then spend money to market it, to make it a viable product.
I don't think there's any reason why, for example, female footballers
couldn't compete in men's
football.
Agree.
But, their ceiling at the moment is probably what? National League?
At best. I mean, I've watched Women's Premier League football, and I still to this day, I mean, I played a Vets match yesterday, and I still to this day can look at that game and think that is no better than what I played in yesterday.
But, I do think Sarah Taylor, her wicket-keeping stands up to any male wicket-keeper in the world.
Agree.
But if Joffa Archer's bowling at her, she ain't getting a game. Because he's gonna take it at the cleaners.
It's like Emily Scarrett, isn't it? Like, she's a fantastic centre. But
yeah.
If she's got Tua Lange coming down her channel, then I'm back in Manu, I'm afraid.
I mean, if there's ever a euphemism, Emily Scarra's got Manu coming down her channel, or up her channel, or in her channel.
I'll tell you what, she's a very good commentator as well.
So
what I was going to say earlier while we were on the cricket chat and we kind of moved on from it, did you see there was a Australia, New Zealand, I think it was an ODI, it might have been a T20, and one of the Kiwi bowlers bowled a slower ball that was 34 kilometres an hour.
What?
34 kilometres an hour.
I mean, a T20 game's only supposed to be an hour and 15 minutes per innings. That would have taken about 7 minutes to get to the crease.
It was an ODI. But yeah, it was, and it got nobbed to mid-off, I think, for no run.
Well, I think that's what a lot of amateur cricketers don't sort of appreciate. Why do the professional players hit it so far? It's because the ball's going much, much quicker when you hit it.
it's simple physics.
Yeah. Trying to hit Brian, who's the, you know, groundsman, you know, bowling his dibbly dobblers over cover for six is not easy.
Not easy.
But it's cricket pitch.
Over mid wicket, it's much easier.
Yeah, you're not top edging Brian, are you, for six?
I was
top edging Brian to second slip.
I was watching a test match at I think it was Old Trafford, and they had a speed gun set up so people could have a go. And this guy was bowling, and he was obviously like a club player or whatever. And I looked at it, and he bowled, and I was like, "Oof!" I was like, "That guy's quick." And the speed gun had him at 58 miles an hour.
did you have a go?
No. I didn't want to get it to break it by trying to get it into minus figures.
Ben's loopy slow right arm, I don't think, would have
registered.
But it's like when the commentators say, "Oh yeah, that was nothing more than a push." Yeah, it's nothing more than a push. The ball was already going 90 miles an hour. It's going to come off the bat quickly. You know what I mean? It's not hard to work out.
Equal force meets immovable object.
70 miles an hour in a bowling machine, and it was, you know,
quick.
Yeah.
And with a bowling machine, you know where it's going to pitch because you've told them where to set it up. So you can watch two just go past your bat. When you bowl, when you
well
got
outside
somebody,
off stump,
well
please.
Outside off stump, yeah.
Sorry, I've massively let you all down, and I've told a lie there. It wasn't 34 kilometres an hour; it was 38 kilometres an hour.
Oh mate,
the difference is when you've got a 90 mile an hour bowler that can bowl it on your toes or at your nose and anywhere in between, and it's all the best time. But there you go. Right, well. I think we've probably gone on for long enough. That was ask more over anything. It was actually thoroughly enjoyable, and it's almost more enjoyable than talking about rugby in general.
I'd say absolutely 100% more enjoyable than talking about rugby,
which is weird.
Especially European rugby.
Maybe, I mean, the Premiership's back this week, but you know, that's dead now. There's no relegation. Hopefully Elin will beat Saracens, but Saracens basically picked a full England 15 to literally dry ream Bedford at the weekend. So, I don't know how I'll hold out too much hope. But fingers crossed for Elin anyway. We'll be back next week. Go well.
Did you say it's Elin Saracens this weekend?
No. Not yet. It's not. But Elin beat the Cornish Pirates this weekend.
Yeah.
I just know that will be coming soon. Elin versus Saracens. I don't know when it is. But I think it's when all the internationals are well up to speed, should we say. This weekend, Ealing are at home to Jersey. And Saracens are playing Doncaster away.
Top of the table, clash that.
Yeah, Doncaster are doing well. But there you go. Right, we'll be back next week, potentially, if we're all still here. So, go well.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.